Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.
Amnesty International South Africa has released a report, and it's really based on a quantitative, qualitative research carried out between February this year all the way to September. And it is looking into informal settlements and how this country and the government is managing, you know, the kind of conditions that people find themselves in particularly those informal places. Of course, by their very nature, informal settlements are not places that are properly designed in the sense that they would have services like water and electricity. But the cities, whether it is a local municipality or government in general, still has the responsibility to make sure that people live in the kind of conditions that are humane. On the line with us is Amnesty International SA campaigner Cassandra Dorasamy. Thank you very, very much, Cassandra, for talking to us. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening, Pamela, and good evening to your listeners.
Cassandra, this study that you conducted between February and September, just maybe give us a sense, was it based on purely what you observed, or did you actually conduct some interviews with the residents of these informal settlements?
Yes, we conducted over 166 interviews with residents across eThekwini, City of Cape Town, and City of Johannesburg, across over 30 informal settlements and temporary relocation areas. We also spoke to city officials, government officials, and NGOs and charities that are also plugging the gap in situations of disaster in informal settlements.
And just to narrow it for us, what exactly were you looking to find?
We were looking to unpack the experiences of people living in informal settlements in the context of flooding. Mm-hmm. Now, we've seen in the past few years major flooding incidences, especially in the Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal, but also in Cape Town and Johannesburg, that have grabbed headlines because of the severity of the floods. Mm. In 2022, over 400 people died in the bout of flooding experienced. Then this year alone, there were 100 people who died. But in between those major incidents are also the regular rainy seasons.
Yeah.
And through the experiences that we heard on the ground, even those regular rainy seasons produce devastation for people living in informal settlements because of the conditions in which they live.
Mm. One of the things that struck me was the fact that, of course, you know, you can't necessarily blame government for natural disasters and climate change. You know, we're all trying to manage, but what the government is not managing to do is reacting accordingly when these disasters do occur, and their reaction either is delayed, and when they do act, they don't necessarily take people to a safer environment.
Exactly. And I think it's important to also say that the context of informal settlements that we have here has its roots in our colonial and apartheid history.
Sure, absolutely.
But that doesn't absolve successive democratic governments from their responsibility to provide adequate housing.
Mm.
And with the lack of affordable, adequate housing available, especially in places that are close to work and jobs, this means that we're seeing increased informal settlements in the cities. And with that comes, of course, vulnerability, because the places in which these informal settlements are built are often in floodplains or low-lying areas that are more vulnerable to flooding. And like you say, government's response in these situations should be a lot more proactive in dealing with the housing crisis and in upgrading existing informal settlements to deal with the challenge of climate change. Because although not every incident of a rain or flooding is attributed to climate change, we do know that the intensity and frequency with which they occur will increase over the next few years. And what we found disheartening was that in the in-between phases, the regular, quote-unquote regular seasonal flooding that we have, people living in informal settlements are left without any assistance from governments, left to fend for themselves or rely on charities that are coming in to provide support, but otherwise have received no support from government in those seasonal rains.
In fact, I like the fact that you point that out. I've often found, and we've seen it many, many times, where you will find that when a disaster does occur, you certainly will see the politicians come out, but the people that actually carry out the work, the people that come and assist the residents, is usually these independent organizations that feed the people, give them, you know, clothes on their backs, and so on. I'm curious about the response and who should take responsibility, because often what you hear is that there would be some sort of a passing of the buck between social development, human settlement, and local municipalities. In your sense of who should be really taking the lead on making sure that we do eventually get to a point where we are dealing with these informal settlements, what's your sense of who should be taking the lead on that?
Well, the report makes a number of recommendations to various government departments, because this requires a coordinated response, not a passing of the buck, but a coordinated response. So first, of course, National Department of Housing is responsible for ensuring, you know, that guiding policy and that resources are plugged into provincial and local government to provide adequate housing. And that's one of the starting points. And I think the rallying call from many of the people that we spoke to in informal settlements. And even today when we launched the report, we had community members with us who again emphasized there's a need for proper housing, there's a need for safe housing, housing that is protective in the context of climate change. So there's a need to start there with providing adequate housing. But also, of course, the disasters will come, and that requires a proper disaster response, and there COGTA takes a lead. There's the National Disaster Management Centers, and of course South Africa has great policies, great plans and frameworks when it comes to response, but not enough capacity in the local governments, which is then at the coal face of responding to crisis. So between these different spheres of government, there needs to be coordination, but also a plugging in of resources, both technical and human resources, into the local government to respond quickly and adequately when there are disasters.
To what extent did people refer to corruption? We've often heard people say, "You know, look, I have applied. I've applied for a home. I've been waiting for 12, 15 years, 20 years for a home. And I'm told that, you know, my name keeps getting pushed back. And yet there are people who have 5-4 homes that go into these places and end up even renting those houses out, the RDP houses. To what extent is this corruption delaying the delivery of homes to people who really do need it?
You know, this comes up so often when we speak to, especially our partners like Abahlali Bus and John Dolo, Abahlali Freedom Park in Johannesburg, Housing Assembly in Cape Town, where there is this this idea of the housing list, but people are unsure whose names are on it, and you know it's sort of like this mythical beast that hasn't provided clarity and certainty to people about when they're going to get housing or when it's going to be their turn. And of course, there's always that element of how is budget being used? Is it going to the right people? Is there consultation and transparency? And in particular, Abahlali Freedom Park in Johannesburg has been at the forefront of calling for more consultation and more transparency in Freedom Park and the Southern Farms developments that are happening, where they have tried to engage with provincial government to ensure that, you know, people, especially people with disabilities and the elderly that they work with, are on this list and are prioritized in new housing developments. But of course, it's been a struggle for them. So this is a major issue that does keep coming up.
Of course, government always speaks of the influx of people, you know, trying to manage that with alongside trying to provide homes. But in your view, is there a real plan by this government or at least even the municipalities themselves, as you said, coordinated effort to make sure that we do plan appropriately and accordingly, because we can forecast the influx of people into major cities. Is there a plan?
There are many plans. There are maybe too many complicated frameworks to deal with that are not being implemented.
Mm.
But I think the starting point and the interesting thing about this piece of research is the upgrading of informal settlements program.
Mm.
Government has had this on the agenda for a long time. But it's happening far too slowly and not adequately enough.
Mm.
And when we talk about upgrading, we're not talking about like just dumping sanitation services that are not maintained and then that's it for the community. We're talking about providing tenure to people who are living in informal settlements where they are situated in suitable land. And when I say suitable, I mean safe land.
Yes, yes.
Making sure that they are connected through paved roads, connected to housing opportunities, that there's electricity, that there are proper toilets, proper sanitation services, a complete upgrading of where people are currently located. Because yes, the situation is overwhelming. There is a large housing crisis.
Mm.
But informal settlements, in a way, are a people-led way of getting the city on board if the city can start providing the services and start in earnest the upgrading program where people are situated. The solution is not more forced evictions. The solution is to work with communities to upgrade properly.
You mentioned the fact that maybe there are too many plans and maybe we're not really looking at those plans and making sure that we implement them properly. Is there at least acknowledgement of the failures of these plans? Is government at least saying, yes, we know we're faltering?
I think so. I think the recent white paper from the Department of Human Settlements acknowledges that the housing crisis has amplified since the end of apartheid. And that in itself is an acknowledgement of how government has failed to respond to this rising housing crisis that we have. There's also, the Presidential Climate Commission, there's a South African local government authority that have recognized that municipalities are not properly equipped to deal with disasters. They're not properly equipped to respond to informal settlements during the rainy seasons. And we see the vacancy rates. We see that the important departments, like the Department of Water and Sanitation in Etipuni, where there were major flooding and major water issues, are understaffed. Those are in and of itself acknowledgement that there's not enough being done.
Cassandra, one of the things that comes up again is, and there are examples here of, for instance, the KZN, where yes, there are issues of flooding and these are climate-related disasters. But even when you have national, for instance, rally behind a municipality, release funds for some sort of relocation of people, then corruption kicks in and nobody knows what happens to those funds. Your thoughts on how government is actually going to deal with that?
And that's something that came up today from community members as well, that there's we hear of all the funds that have been allocated, but the people on the ground are not experiencing those funds. It's not trickling down to them. But also, in addition to accountability for how funds are being spent, there must also be accountability for how plans are being made to relocate people. And in KZN this year, five people died during the recent floods in June in Lamontville. And these were people who had been moved by the government into that area because they were flooded in 2022. So that shows that not enough due diligence was done to ensure that this is a safe area for people to be moved into. And as a result of that, there was this loss of life. And one of the people we spoke to in Lamontville described just how harrowing it was that night when the floods came, and he had to tie himself to a tree and throw a rope across to try and get people. And they managed to save as many people as they could. But sadly, five people, two women who were in their 50s and three children, died during those floods. And that those are people who are moved there by government. Mm. So there needs to be accountability for that.
Gosh, thank you so much. Cassandra, where can people find the report?
People can find the report at amnesty.org.za. And also on our social media sites, we have interviews with the people, some of the people who offered their stories on our Instagram page and Facebook page. And you can find us at amnesty.org.za.
Appreciate your time. Cassandra Dirasamy is an Amnesty International South Africa campaigner.
Point of View. Discussing the world around you. On the street. Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.